contractor, we've got a tough decision here, and we've requested, you know, we've done cost analyses and sent them to the state. We've had no response to date. And it's a very frustrating process. To support our position, you know, I think the state acknowledged early on in this particular case that they had made some errors in their initial appraisal. Subsequent to that, they didn't change their position, but they moved us over and said, well, okay, we were wrong here, but now if we go over to this code, we were still right according to this code. But we went out and solicited an independent engineering firm to give us a determination, an interpretation. Do we just hand them the documents? We didn't explain to them where we were. What is your interpretation of our analysis, our approach to this problem? And they came back and reaffirmed that, they, in their opinion, we were in compliance with the contract documents. And we took that one step further, had them go back to the code agency, which in this case happened to be AISC, and said, what was the intent of this code when it was written? And AISC came back and reaffirmed that our interpretation of the code was correct. Now, to date, the department has just refused to recognize, acknowledge, and to date they haven't responded to those to that information. But it's very frustrating. You know, I feel like we're just in a battle of coercion and attrition. And when we have no, our option is to commit funds, legal, you know, swallowing funds, and we're in the construction business. We're not in the litigation business. We just want to reach an equitable resolution on this, and we would like a voice. We would like responses, and we would like to talk, have an opportunity to present our case.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to make sure John's
not finished. No, I'd like an opportunity to present our case to the people making these decisions. I didn't think that a request for a 30-minute meeting to discuss this issue with department officials was at all unreasonable. Dave?
Mr. Chairman, Dave Eberle. All this is due to me. This is the first I've ever heard that there was a problem out there that was not being addressed. One of the principles and one of the things I was going to speak about earlier, there's a formal process which is set out in the contract, and that needs to be there, and there needs to be some tweaking. There's an informal process which we advocate very strongly in the department, and it's called partnering. And basically, it's treating everybody on a business level, treating them honestly and fairly. And we actually have formal meetings before the contract starts. We agree to an informal process of elevating issues so that they don't sit at the low level and not get addressed. We literally create a hierarchy ladder whereby if it's not getting solved in a certain amount of time at that level, they pick up the phone and talk to the people at the next level. And you get the next level of the contractor and the next level of the department involved. If that doesn't get resolved, they've got so many days, and the next level gets involved, and it ultimately gets to the contracting officer. I'm very disappointed to hear that this is perking at that low level, and no one has picked up the phone or called Gordon Keith or myself to jump in and see what's stalling the process. And literally, this is the first I've heard of it, and that's very unfortunate, because we're strong advocates of let's solve the problems at the lowest level, and if you can't solve them, admit you can't solve them and elevate them to the next level so that they can get solved. So I'm very disappointed to hear that it's stalled at that level. But I think, you know, contractors, as well as my own people, need to recognize that they can't get a decision elevated. And so I think we've got fault on both sides of the table.
I have been involved in the partnering concept and have been but the coordinator or whatever on that, and I think I was with Summit Paving in the Fairbanks, maybe, that we had a partner agreement on the project that was talked about earlier here. I know it was a Fairbanks project that went up there. So I also believe that the little problems grow really big in a hurry if it's not elevated. and just being human nature, nobody wants to admit that, well, I can't settle this problem, so we're going to have to give it to my superior and go right on up from that. So anyway, you've been sitting here, both of you, for a long time, and I'd like to get your comments, and then Senator Taylor has some
comments. Well, I'm Jim Pisani. I've looked at some of this stuff here, and I thought we were here to look at this process, and it needs to be looked at more deeply than what you guys over there on that side of the table are looking at. Because first off, this claims appeal, just like the fellow down here from the sewer shipper arch had said, this isn't really the time frames. You've got me down here as February 6th of 2001 of noticing the receipt of notice from you people. You know, I started out in this claims process in April of 1999. I got a decision from the engineer in June 2nd of 1999. I filed my appeal with the contracting officer July 23rd of 1999. He had 90 days process. You go through this 7 days. If you and the engineer can't settle it, then you got 14 days to file your claim. The engineer has 60 days to make a decision. You got 30 days after that to file to the contracting officer. Contracting officer has 90 days to make an answer. You got 14 days to file after that to go to the appeal to hearing officer. After that gets to that point, there is no time limits. That's the end of it. The hearing officer can take 2 years if he really wants to. He can do anything he wants to up until that time that the hearing is done. Once the hearing is done, then you've got 90 days to have a decision answered to the contractor. And I don't know what's going to happen in my case, because you're not going to make your 90 days, and I don't know where we're going to go from there then. But they've got this down on these listings that this has only been a short-term, one-year period of this. I'm almost 3 years right now into my process on this thing. Contracting officer, July 23rd of 1999, received my information. So that puts him actually at October 23rd, 90 days. October 12th, he sends me a letter and says, well, you haven't sent me all the information that we needed on this claims, so I want another couple months. I said, what information? And the guy sends back a list of information that is all listed in the claims appeal. Everything that we sent him is already there. So he wants more money. You know what I found out? Contracting officer was moving the state offices during that summer of 1999. He didn't have time to do this decision. So he wanted more time. Okay, by that time, we're nearing this battle of this job. We're going to the point where don't make your decision, because we're going to supplement this claim now with additional information that we have found since this time, so you can make one total answer. So this drawn out until the period of January or February 2001, when I finally got the contracting officer's decision. Well, immediately filed for the hearing officer. The hearing officer was appointed March 27th of 2001, and this is currently February 22nd of 2002, almost 1 year later, and I'm still not done. Now, you guys have all these deadlines in here, such as the time for issuing a contracting officer's decision may be extended for good cause by the Commissioner of Administration. There's not a commissioner administration letter anywhere from anybody in the DOT or anybody that says they wanted to extend my contracting officer's time. It came from the contracting officer himself. You go on to these other parts of this thing. If that decision is not made by the date it is due, the contractor may proceed as if the procurement officer had issued a decision adverse to the contractor. So I did my second one. When I finally got the second contracting officer's appeal to him, and I said, okay, here's all your information. 90 days later, he didn't make an answer. I sent a letter to the DOT. They says, tough. You're not going to get this answer. You're going to have to wait till he makes his answer. Well, a couple months later, he makes his answer. You go on down here to the next part, and this is state statutes that I'm reading off. This is what we have to go by. Everybody in this room that's dealing with this DOT, which is the top dog for all this. I've dealt with the DNR. Well, the DNR moves right on up to the DOT's position. So DOT gets to make administration decisions that the DNR has. Well, if you guys want everybody to follow the same rules, you're going to have to put them people on notice, just like people from Linder here. You you know, DOT says whether or not DOT's employees, their fish and game employees, that shouldn't be relevant here. It should be the fact that the DOT is going to make the administration part of decisions on this. Those people that are dealing with her, which would have been the fish and game, are still in the same position as a DOT employee. I mean, if you're going to make their decisions for them, you got to use them as the same type person. So I'm down here to my last part of this thing. After the end of the hearing involving a procurement of construction contract, the decision shall be made within 90 days after the hearing to all parties. And after that 90 days, it tells you can go to a judicial appeal. It doesn't say anything in here what happens after the 90 days if we don't get an answer. What's DOT got against them if they don't make their answer here? There is absolutely nothing that forces DOT to do anything in any of these state statutes. If they miss their deadline, they just miss the deadline. If a contractor misses his deadline, his claim is gone.
He forfeits it.
He has got 14 days to file after he can't make a settlement with his engineer that's on the site. Well, now you've argued with this guy for 7 days about this particular decision or this problem you've arisen. So now you've got to hurry up and you've got to make a claim to the same guy that you can't make a decision with. I mean, you know you're not going to make an answer out of this guy. He's not going to come back and change his mind. So then I looked through this kind of a paper and I thought, now after we've got this engineer's decision, it goes to the contracting officer. And I'm really curious, and you're the contracting officer of the DOT, Mr. O'Brien, how many times did the contracting officer go against the engineer's decision? Now we've got a process here that is in the middle of the engineer and hearing officer that is what? And what does that do for anybody? Does that put it a longer time for the DOT? Or more money for the contractor? Like they said, you know, I'm in multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars in this claim right now. I can't recoup that. As you guys say over there, attorney's fees aren't legal for this thing. Maybe interest, maybe not. We don't know whether that'll ever happen. So you guys theoretically cost no money out of any DOT, DNR, fish and game employee's pocket ever. It all comes out of our pocket. And all, you know, attorneys, these guys are great guys. I mean, they did the best job you could possibly have heard of anybody, anywhere in this process. I mean, they established the case very clean and clearly. But the thing that is so funny about this case is that the DOT admitted that they made, or DNR admitted that they had made a mistake on their design. All the way from the designer to the project manager agreed that there was a mistake. Then they gave us a piece of paper and says, after we had caught them, I caught them physically changing a computer disk that I gave them for a pay item. And they admitted that they changed it 30 days after my project was done. Then they terminated my project. They said, tough guy, you're done. Now what do you get to do? You're terminated. And that's the way it's gone, all this time. I'm sitting here almost 3 years after the beginning of this headache. Actually, the headache started 9 months before that. But the engineer decision came out 3 years ago. So the process that is involved into this thing right now is so skewed towards the DOT and the state. They have no problems of not meeting deadlines. They have no problems of IMSS cooperating, like I say, the contracting officer's decisions, which are just basically, I would almost bet you, 10 to 1. That you're going to find maybe 1 out of 100, the contracting officer is going to go against the engineer. So now we've got another 90-day appeal or period in there, plus the filing day of month. Puts the contractor where? He doesn't get any options. You guys have all the options in the world. And if you don't make your decision, what's going to happen?
We've got two people offline that have been waiting patiently that didn't want to butt in, and I think that, you know, we want to wind this thing up here, and we have somebody else here to testify, and then we'll do a wrap-up. Mr. Smith from Kenai, are you online? I appreciate your patience.
Yes, thank you, Senator Cowdery. This is Larry Smith, S-M-I-T-H. I am the president of D&L Construction Company, Incorporated. A small contracting firm has been in business in this state for 20 years this year, and I'm always amazed that people want to say how long they've been in Alaska, and I don't really know what value that is, but I was born here, and I've been here 49 years, nearly 6 months, so whatever that's worth. We were involved in a claim with the DOT, over a project called the Church Road Upgrade, a four-mile segment of state highway, federally funded project in Wasilla in 1998. We successfully completed that in October, had a final inspection in October of 1998, had some problems on the project with utilities, went to claim. And I guess we were very fortunate in that our claim, we filed the claim, I think, in December of 98. It was resolved within 18 months. However, there are a number of things in that claims process that I think were abusive to us. Those things still exist today, and that's why I'm here testifying. First of all, the contracting officer's decision, in my view, is a joke, because quite frankly, the contracting officer, as I understand it, in most cases, doesn't even write the contracting officer's decision. It's my understanding in our case that the contracting officer, Mr. Eberle, didn't draft the decision. It was drafted, in fact, by the Assistant Attorney General, who defended the state against our claim and then simply signed by Mr. Eberle. That's one of the abuses we saw. Again, in our case, we were fortunate. We presented a $1 million claim. I'll step back a minute. Our original bid was for $2.6 million for this project. We had some changes during the project, brought it up to about 3.3. Ultimately, with our claim, we collected $722,000, I believe, on an initial $1 million claim. Our hearing officer awarded us everything we asked for except for $50,000 in claim preparation costs, which he was not allowed to award because of statutes or something like that. After the hearing officer's decision, it went to the commissioner's office, and the commissioner's office somewhat, I guess, arbitrarily decided that they were going to knock us down a couple of $100,000. Which they did. I think the hearing officer awarded us 922 round figures. We collected 722. We have never collected the prejudgment interest. There's some $92,000 still sitting out there in prejudgment interest that our firm has not been able to collect. During the process last year of the legislation that now allows DOT to pay the interest, we tried to get it retroactive so it would cover our claim back from 98, and that wasn't possible. So we're still hanging out there not being able to collect the interest on this $722,000. In my mind, the problem here is, the major problem is, there's no incentive for DOT to settle these claims. Absolutely none. Because they're not paying for anything. No matter what they do, they go to the Federal Highway Administration on bended knee, it seems, and then basically they get reimbursed for everything they do. So they're not accountable for anything in this entire process. What we found during the discovery process in our claim, that DOT, in order to encumber funds from the Federal Highway Administration, uses a document, and I apologize, I can't remember the exact title of that document, but they send this document down to the Federal Highway Administration asking for additional funds because of overruns here and there. In our case, our project manager sent these documents down to the Federal Highway people in Juneau, asked to encumber these funds for the very same thing that we were claiming for, and then turned around and refused to pay us for our claim until we went through this hearing process, hearing officer decision, and such. So I guess, I don't want to come here just to complain about the process. It's full of abuses. I empathize with other contractors, Mr. Pasenik and these other contractors who have been out there for years and years. There are other contractors out there, too, who are suffering these same things. This process absolutely needs to be changed. The DOT needs to somehow be made accountable for the things that they're doing in this process. And I don't know if that's... They're not bonded. As a contractor, we post payment bonds, performance bonds for the risks that we take. To my knowledge, the DOT people are not bonded. I guess maybe that's a possibility that they should somehow bond themselves, or the state should bond them for these abuses that they're perpetrating on the construction industry. Other than that, I mean, I don't know. The arbitration thing, that sounds great. We went through arbitration with DOT and our claim, and we spent 12 or 14 hours sitting in an office with our lawyers and these DOT people in Anchorage and in an arbitrator, and it was a total waste of money and a total waste of time. DOT came to the arbitration saying we weren't entitled, there was no entitlement for our claim and no monies due. They walked out 14 hours later saying the same thing. In my mind, they didn't arbitrate in good faith. They came in with a saying no, no, and they left saying no, no. It was simply a delaying tactic that they used to delay the hearing officer process and also to cost the contractors more money. They did pay for half of it, but still we were out a few thousand extra dollars. And then I heard Mr. Everly talking about the partnering process. We partnered with DOT on the Church Road project, and I guess to finalize my comments, I still feel the stab wounds in my back from that partnering process. So this is a real problem, especially for small contractors like us. We do $1 to $2 to $3 million of work a year, and for us to wait 18 months to collect $722,000, most of which we paid to the attorneys and the bonding company for this project. I mean, I think we're lucky to have survived, and I really hope that this committee spends some more time on this, and I thank you for what you're doing now, and I certainly hope that you understand this is a very big problem in this state, and it needs to be cleaned up. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and I appreciate your comments, and I'd just like to say that's the purpose of us having this hearing, and I hope that Dick comes back to us after talking to you and helps us with work with whatever needs to be done to correct it. I know I've worked with the commissioner in the past, some while back on the airport when we first came up, the administration, I don't want to say the administration because the commissioner is the administration part of it, but the governor wanted project labor agreements at the airport, and I really put my foot down on that. I talked to Perkins, and I had, I think I had a budget. I had you guys by the budget or something anyway. And I told them that, you know, that I didn't think that was fair, and I didn't want to see it. Well, Joe says, give me 6 weeks. Give him 6 weeks, and he solved that problem. We don't have that. And on the same token, I talked with the governor last year on the, and working with this, Senator Wilkin brought it to my attention on the St. Mary's project. I was promised if I would hold off on this, we had legislation that passed the Senate, and not pressure to get it passed, that spend the summer in negotiation, they did. But the bill is still hung up, and I can't shake it loose in the House. So, you know, it's fine and dandy to work things out, but I like to have something in statute that says things. And I'm still, where it's hung up in the House, pardon? Yeah. So anyway, we have another, two more people. I would like to go offline again to Mr. DeHart and from Kenai, and then we have another one here, then we'll do a wrap-up. Are you there, Mr.
Are you there?
Thank you.
Yes, this is Steve DeHart, DeHart. I'm a small contractor in Kodiak.
Yes.
And this has to do with the bid protest process, but it directly goes in line with what some of the other people were saying. I protested a bid opening. I got a favorable hearing, a favorable response from the hearing officer, and it now sits in Mr. O'Brien's office. The problem is, we need a decision. It's tied up our bonding for the last 6 months, and the only response we get out of Mr. O'Brien's office is that he has 90 days to decide this. What's going to happen, which I was informed yesterday by the attorney that represented the state, is he's going to undermine this and circumvent the process by awarding the contract, him and the procurement officer, and the $20,000 that I've spent in the last 6 months and the hundreds of hours I've put in to see this get to the commissioner's office is all going to be undermined by an attorney.
Well,
I don't feel we have any control over the attorney. I don't feel there's anything that we can do to stop this, and it needs to be changed. He doesn't represent the state. I mean, he does represent the state, but he has no interest in a fair decision anywhere.
I see. Okay, I appreciate you testifying and sticking by with us. We're running a little over here, and I don't know how long we've had this. I think we're supposed to be offline at noon, but we're on Senate time, so anyway.
Clock stopped at noon.
We have one more person here to...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll make this brief. My name is Dan Libby, L-I-B-B-E-Y, and I'm with Oles-Morrison. I'm also here on behalf of the Alaska chapter of the Associated Builders and Contractors. And I just want to state, in the position of the ABC, the Associated Builders and Contractors, that they completely support the upgrade of this administrative claims process, and they also adopt the positions as they've been articulated in this room, particularly by Mr. Baker and Mr. Brady, that an arbitration scheme would be a very effective scheme to implement into this process. That the hearing, that if an arbitration scheme is not included as a statutory, as part of the statutory framework to the upgrade of this overall process, then the hearing officer process should be revamped to reflect an unbiased procedure that also puts in a good deal of accountability for the decisions that are made. As to the delegation of authority, it would really be nice to see that the scheme addressed that as well. The overall claims process scheme addressed delegation of authority. If the Department of Transportation delegated authority to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, the Department of National Resources, the same claims process should apply. So it doesn't matter what state agency authority has been delegated to, the claims process will be the same. The handling of small claims, and I think the settlement of small claims in that regard, is also and should also be addressed in that statutory framework. In terms of specifics, if there is an arbitration scheme that is suggested statutorily, then the inclusion of interest in that scheme, I think, should be addressed. The reason being, I think the October 2001 statutory interest provision that's been provided in the state procurement code addressed interest in situations controversies are raised to the procurement officer, controversies are raised on appeal to the Commission of Transportation, and then on to the appeal of the Superior Court. And I don't think it specifically delegates otherwise. The reason I say that is there's been sentiments that prejudgment interest should completely be allowable in claims against the Department of Transportation, but the department has taken the contrary position in the past. That has been remedied by this new statutory framework, but if an arbitration scheme is to be implemented statutorily, then in guidance of steering that scheme into place, it may be appropriate to also include a prejudgment interest clause with that, so there's no real issue on that, and that could be a guidance of the overall upgrade of the administrative claims process. I also think in looking at the overall upgrade and the discussion of attorney's fees that can be implemented into this kind of a framework, Mr. Gross had indicated that attorney's fees are not always fully awarded, and that certainly is true. The way the civil rules of procedure are laid out in the state of Alaska, attorney's fees are not fully awarded. It's based on the level of contesting the dispute, whether it's settled immediately, whether it goes on into the discovery phase, whether it's settled after trial, so there's different percentages as to what you're able to collect. There's also a rule which I think should be strongly considered in this context because it would address accountability, and it would also address the settlement of claims, and that's Rule 68, Civil Rule 68. That rule is put into place and provides, it's what's called the offer of judgment, whereby if at the very beginning of the claim, the initial stage of the claim, a party suggests a settlement offer, a number, and that number then is, if it's accepted, then the claim can be resolved. If it's rejected, the claim goes on, the party that prevails at trial by 5% greater than that offer, then is entitled to 75% attorney's fees if the offer is made at the initial point. If it's made halfway through the claims process, then it's a 50% award of attorney's fees if you beat that offer by 5%. So it really gives you the incentive to settle the case early, because the earlier you settle it, the less likely you will be exposed to the higher percentage of attorney's fees if it does go to full adjudication on the merits. So I think that would be a very valuable asset, a very valuible tool. It's used in the Superior Court quite often, and it would be a very valuable tool for settlement and for accountability both. So that may be also a specific consideration that could come into the statutory framework in upgrading this claims process.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Taylor and Senator Wilkins, and then we're going to wrap this thing up here.
Well, that's what I was hoping to try and do, too, just wrap up some of this stuff real quick. I appreciate the comments on offers of judgment. Rule 82 does not provide adequate compensation. I think any of us that have practiced for any period of time understand that. It's token at best. I wanted to mention that the state of Oregon several years ago, one of the major insurance carriers down there was literally quoted from recordings and other things and from actual documents that they had written, where if you had a fender bender in the state of Oregon, and I think it was Allstate, but it may have been somebody else, they'd write a letter to you that said if your claim was under $1,000, go ahead and try and find an attorney. We're not paying, because we know it'll cost you way more than that to get an attorney, go to court, and to sue us. And so as a company policy, they just refused to pay any claims, no matter how valid they were, under that amount. That caused the Oregon State Legislature to go in and pass a law that said if a company refused to settle and it was a valid claim and later proven to be a valid claim in court, you were recovering double either the attorney's fees or the amount in question. I think you got full attorney's fees and double the amount at issue. Of course, when the tort reformers all came along, they killed all that in this state, didn't they? And Dick and I have had some real long, serious discussions about that, and I find it fascinating to be discussing with him today ways of finding incentives for settlement. Well, there's no incentive greater than a contingent fee agreement. As soon as you get every attorney in the room on a contingent fee agreement, all of a sudden, there isn't any benefit to running up a big tab against somebody, is there? You don't have to run up $50,000 to $100,000 worth of debt against that guy before you're going to settle his case. But as long as you keep the insurance company's attorney getting paid full time, and your attorney only gets paid when he settles, there's only one attorney who's got an incentive to settle. Your attorney. That's the plaintiff who's bringing this case. And I'll guarantee you, today in Alaska, there isn't an insurance company attorney out there who's going to settle a case till he's billed between $50,000 and $75,000 out against that file, and then voila, he will discover and write a letter to the claims agent for the insurance company, oh, I think our risk is greater than what I may have first assumed. It's that attitudinal shift that's also occurred, I'm fearful, within my department of law and the advice that they may have been given to DOT, because the leveraging that's been going on in this 2% of cases is incredible. When my colleague Gary Wilkin asks the question, why are we at this point now? It's because an attitude change occurred. And that attitude change is found in Department of Health and Social Services. Bartlett Hospital filed an appeal because of a certificate of need that wasn't granted. And the certificate of need only came into play when they bought their new MRI machine. They didn't think they had to get one because it was under $1 million. But when the machine actually got installed, total cost was $1,023,000. So because it was $23,000 over, Department of Health and Social Services refused to certify the machine, and thus all the people who got treated with that machine, when the claims would get filed over at Hess, what did they do? They denied them all, right? So Bartlett Hospital files with the department, goes through the appellate process, goes to a hearing officer. Hearing officer rules in Bartlett Hospital's favor. It goes up to the commissioner, Karen Perdue. What does Karen Perdue do? She remands it back down for another hearing. It went through full hearing 5 times in 7 years, went up to her each time, and each time she remanded it back down for further hearing. Guess what?
department didn't have to pay for it. Department's budget was lower that year because of it. Finally, Bartlett got the place. They'd already used the machine up. They're off buying a new one and never had been paid on the old one. That's when I brought a bill that said, you got to resolve these things. You got to get people out of this hula hoop operation and get to some finality. So it isn't just DOT that's been dragging their feet and doing this stuff. I'll guarantee you, other agencies have been doing the same thing because we as legislators keep hearing these types of complaints. So how do we get it wrapped up and resolved? I think there is a way to do it, and I applaud Dick's efforts, and I applaud yours too, Mark, for the conscientious way in which you fellas within DOT have been trying to find a way out of this morass. I think the way out of the morass is something similar to what we use when we adversely take through condemnation someone's property. Our forefathers around here realized that if the state came in with all its power and we're going to put I-5 through the middle of John Cowdery's house, we've got to offer John a fair amount for his house because we are going to take it. A bulldozer's going to come out there and wipe the house out. So we need to offer John a fair amount. Well, how do you set up a system so it really is fair? Because we could come in and lowball him, couldn't we? We could give him half what his house worth, and we'd do it on a quick take, give the check to the court, John gets to pick up the check for half the value of his house, and boom, the bulldozer goes through 30 days later. That's the way it works. So how do we protect John? John can bring suit against the state, and if John can show that the state offer, that he can beat the state's offer in front of a jury by more than 5%, John got actual attorney's fees, didn't he? Plus he got his judgment, plus he got prejudgment interest on that. So at least in that rare instance, people got fully compensated if they'd lost their house. We can go to a system that does that. We obviously do it in condemnation cases to keep the power of the state from being abused on the individual little property owner. We could go to something like that. We could go back and try and repair, I think, the damage done to Rule 68 and the tort reform movement. Rule 68 used to say, offers of judgment are offers of judgment, and if you can go into court and beat that offer of judgment, you get 100% of your attorney's fees from that date forward. It was the insurance industry that came in through the tort reform movement and said, oh, God, we don't like 100%. Gee, let's have 75% at one stage and 50% at another stage. Well, every time you whittled it down from 100%, you took the incentive to settle out. So if you want strong incentives, we can write strong incentives back into this thing. And I'm looking at all departments, not just DOT on this stuff. The other thing is I like the concept, though I don't know how well it will work, of each side making an offer, and then when we reach some finality, as Dick has suggested, you prorate it back. And that may be another good workable mechanism. I believe that the rest of the construction industry, those not dealing with state agencies or federal, found a solution to all this years ago. And Dick and I are both laughing about this one. Construction industry found out a long time ago they couldn't afford lawyers and they couldn't afford the time to go to court. I mean, how can you have a huge 10-story building all tied up for 5 or 6 years while you work your way up to the Supreme Court to decide whether or not the guy's building the building right or not? You couldn't do that. You couldn't tie things up like that. So as a consequence, what they do? They invented arbitration. You pick one, I pick one, the two guys get together and pick one, and in a month we got to have a decision because I'm going to be pouring concrete out here, right? I mean, things had to move. I still think that binding and mandatory arbitration will not only take care of the big case, but it'll take care of that little guy too, who's sitting there with a $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 claim. If he can get a rapid response to an arbitration and he's willing to say, I'm putting all my cards on the table, win, lose, or draw, this is the end of it. Let's do it. If it works okay for the rest of the construction industry and for the private sector, why wouldn't it work okay for the state too? I mean, are we going to give up so much leverage in the process, or are we going to get really gouged maybe by the other guys? I don't think so. But again, I want to applaud you people. I want to suggest that I think those are some
avenues of approach that have been successful for other people in the same circumstances, and that if necessary, this committee should really take a look at introducing legislation to accomplish that. And whatever you can come up with for additional ideas, Mark and Dave, I appreciate that very much, and I really appreciate the candor of your answers today too. And Dick and Mr. Baker and my good friend Kevin, if you have any additional suggestions, I'd really be open to those and be willing to work with you and work with my good chairman, John. And if we come up with something, I think it will be beneficial to all parties, and especially the state in the long run.
Yeah, final comment. Senator Wilson, and then I'll try to wrap this thing up.
Thank you. With your indulgence, Mr. Chairman, I have five things I'd like to touch on. First, I'm here. I had two constituents come to me this fall, and it's on the other end of this problem. And we did a little road in Fairbanks, 3rd Avenue, Cease. And constituent B has a 8-store mini mall. Constituent A has a little printing shop. 3 employees, hand them out. Small businesses, forever small business. Both came to me independently and said, the state is beating the hell out of me. They want to take my land. They're not giving me anything for it. You know, we've been through all the hearings and the lawyers, and, you know, I don't know what to do, Gary. And I didn't know anything about this. So I went off to Juneau with this as an issue. Senator Torgerson had the same issue. And as we were talking, just as we were, this came up. Senator Torgerson put in a bill, Senate Bill 278, three of us are co-sponsors, to talk about that and to get the state to make a better effort to try to have some resolution before we go through all the things that we're talking about at this table, but at the other end of the process. To sort of complete that part of the story, client A, he did the printing for my legislative survey, and I was in his little print shop 3 Saturdays ago, and I said, so how's the project going? We got a bill going, we're going to try to maybe raise this level. And he says, we settled. And I said, oh, you did? And that's changed in the last 4 months. He says, yeah, Gary, I can't. He said, I can't afford it. They just beat the hell out of me. It's okay. So I got back to Juneau, and I called the client, constituent B. He says, I'm going to court. He says, I'm going to break even if I win, but those bastards aren't going to beat me. And so that's the 2% that I'm here representing. I mean, I think we ought to be proud, Mark, of 98%, and we are. But it's those 2%, some of which I hear the stories here today, and my constituents A and B that I'm really here to talk about. We shouldn't be placed in that position to have those kind of issues. And I'll fast forward. The letters between Mr. Brady and Commissioner Perkins are entertaining, and they can do what they want with them, but obviously two sides of the story. But I would just refer to page number 2, right in the middle. I'm disappointed in this statement. I would suggest to the department that they change their attitude. If we could refer to page 2, right in the middle, we negotiate for long periods of time, as asserted by Mr. Brady. The final sentence there says, and I think to my constituents A and B, the contractor always has the option to break off negotiations and pursue their claim. The responsibility for prolonged settlement negotiations is shared equally by both parties. I just simply don't see it that way. I would suggest that sentence ought to read, the responsibility to minimize prolonged settlement negotiations is placed upon the state of Alaska just because of the resources they have. I think we as the state should acknowledge that we're fighting and not fighting, we're negotiating with small business people A and B, and it's not their responsibility to carry the issue forward. So, I wanted to ask you, we talked about arbitration. Would you envision in your scheme, you mentioned a couple times, would you envision a traditional split the baby arbitration, or would you envision a final last best offer in these types of things?
You mean the arbitration in terms of the offer judgment? Or, well, I think that the scheme could work as Senator Taylor had. This is Dan Libby. By the way, I think the scheme could work, as Senator Taylor has kind of indicated. It would be a last and best offer. If you rejected it, went on to arbitration, and prevailed by greater than 5%, then it would be a full and actual attorney's fees award, and really gives that high incentive for settlement. You know, really allows for the parties to very objectively look at their positions and think
realistically. That's a possibility. That works in the construction business?
It does.
Okay. Second to last thing. Ms. Brady, I heard your comment about attrition through the department, and we have dumped a lot of money, and we hear that comment, all of us in legislature, not only on this issue, but other issues as well. And so I'm glad you brought that up. I think that is a problem that we're having in DOT, and it's a problem the kind that we like. We've got huge capital budgets funded by a lot of federal money. So, and the last thing, Mark, give us a status of your report back. The name of it escapes me here, but tell us when your report is due. And I heard arbitration, hearing officer accountability, small claims resolution, missed deadlines on behalf of the state, and delegation of authority. Do you think that you'll talk about those six things and when?
I'll take the last question first. Of the items you mentioned, I think all of those are discussed in the paper, with the exception of delegation of authority. And I've actually got some comments on that, and we've addressed that in a different way, outside of the process that we have with associated contracts. The other issues I expect will be addressed. Time frames. Dick and I have a draft copy of this report. We are, we've agreed to take it to our respective parties. In most cases, we have representatives on this committee that have not gotten input from both their departments, their attorneys, on this issue. So this is the opportunity for both sides to go back, sit down with their folks. That's a tough one. I guess I'll look to Dick, too.
I'd like to throw that back to the three of you, because when we talk about modification of legislation, we're talking about changing the state procurement code.
Right.
That's not going to happen, I expect, between the 15th of March and the end of session.
That's true.
Which means, is this something that we want to entertain over the summer and have some hearings over the summer, looking to introduce legislation if following session? I mean, we would look for some advice, I think.
Well, I think, I agree. You know, we're getting down the wire. The last day for individual filing of bills was
last Tuesday, wasn't it?
And now the only way you file bills is committee. So we are winding down, but some of the major legislation that's happened throughout the state has not been done in one two-year period. I mean,
right.
and that's why I appreciate, you know, and expect all your help, as well as Senator Taylor. You know, Senator Taylor chairs Judiciary, which I also serve on. So we would like, you know, to gather all the information. We'll get this here depositions of this, and incidentally, anybody that we don't have their email, we'll get you and can email this to you. If you'd ask Crystal and give it to her, we'd be glad to furnish you with all of this hearing. And also, I had asked DOT for on the claims that's been filed. I in fairness to them, I just asked them last night at 4 o'clock. And I think that they'll make a good effort. Hopefully, with 7 to 10 days, this committee can have that information. I'll share that with you also. And if Dick can work with my staff as well, Senator Taylor, on the necessary changes to make this thing a better, that's our objective here. So, yes, Senator Taylor.
Yeah, I really wanted it. I thought Gary hit the point right on the head going down that line, and the timeline.
Real quick point.
Yeah, I wanted to just get the timeline on the bill.
Which I hadn't thought about as seriously until you suggested it, Senator, is a creature of agreement.
Right.
And if there's going to be some delay in going through this hearing process to change the procurement code, there's nothing to stop the department from just across the board telling the contractors that they're willing to arbitrate with them right now. And that could be implemented. By the time the hearing process was completed, you probably have a couple of positive examples of arbitration results, which ought to be really meaningful in assisting the whole process.
And in fact, that was mentioned earlier, that legislation is already on the books that allows for that as an option, and I would certainly encourage the department to look at that. But my concern now is are we going to waste another full year before we get back to the place, or a year and a half almost,
before we get to the place of having some finality available within the process for those people contemplating additional contracts. That we got a whole another building season coming up here. Hopefully something's going on the street, and I'd like people to feel very comfortable and know that there is a quick and speedy, fair resolution process, because that's all we're trying to build here. And so I would not hesitate to suggest to you that we may not be able to accomplish that legislation this year, but I think at the very least we ought to get the rough parameters of a bill in and filed so that we can have some hearings on them and maybe even carry on some hearings during the interim, though everybody's running in this state at this point. It's going to be somewhat chaotic trying to get anything done. But the idea...
But I'm running in Anchorage.
Yeah. Actually, I'm the only one that can tell you I'm going to be back here next year.
That's right.
You know, everybody else is
He'll be
and I'm not sure in which capacity. That's the problem. But I think we ought to move forward with at least... I'd like to have a rough draft of the concepts and the bill we're looking at within about another 2 weeks, by mid-March. And I know that's a short time frame, but...
AGC can do it. I don't know what's holding the team.
Yeah.
I'd just like to say...
Well, I think it's serious enough that we're all willing to travel and spend our time and work on it. I mean, really, this is very important to all of us. And we're willing to give you that additional time and effort if we can help.
If we recognize this as a draft.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. And I'd just like to say we have to vacate this room. I reserved this room. We have to vacate this room in 5 minutes. Anyway, there's another meeting right now going on in Juneau, and we tie up this communication system. So, anyway, anything in the next couple of minutes? Just
can I
wrap
make
up?
One quick comment? I think something that none of us talked about here was holding the hearing officer's feet to the fire. In my particular case, my hearing officer made his findings of fact and conclusions of law, but he did not do the math. He did not tie, and there were experts on both sides that said what this issue is worth is what that issue is worth. He did not do any of that. And it rendered his decision worthless. And then you are, if you're the contractor, you're held over the barrel. You get this decision in January, and the legislators are getting ready to meet. So you have to decide whether you want to settle and get it funded while they're in session, or if you wait another year for them to become in session again. So that's really a glitch right there. And then I have a personal comment to the state here. When Mr. O'Brien commented about the lawsuit going forward to Montgomery Watson, I believe I should be allowed to participate in that lawsuit, and that the state should not get a windfall when they wouldn't even pay my attorney fees.
If you all will work in one minute, please.
1 minute. Senator Wilkin asked the issue about delegation of authority. The department has just instituted what's called a contracting officer warrant system. Quickly, it sets up levels of delegation of authority. It sets up minimum training requirements, minimum experience requirements. It'll be a formal system. It's been adopted by policy. By July, they'll all have to have interim warrants. So there is, we recognize that there's a need for training. We recognize that there's issues out there, and we're taking steps to address it. Just real quickly, the last issue is the numbers don't support the idea that the number of claims have increased. I have records going back to 1988, and we average 3 claims a year, and it has not changed. So,
but you average 3 claims that are. Disputed.
Right. And yes. Primarily most of the discussion is focused around this hearing officer arbitration process. We're talking about the ones that would be going to arbitration.
That's why arbitration is not really a big major step for you to make, because there's so few cases. I think you can just implement this thing. And honest to God, you talk about a political home run for this governor to hit. Have Joe implement this process and implement it quickly, and all of a sudden, poof, a whole bunch of problems disappear, you know. I'd recommend it to you. Let me suggest one other thing. On arbitration, as a way of cutting the baby in half, if you don't want to go the full route, you go, it's not,
You can either make it binding arbitration so nobody can appeal from it, nothing. That's the end of it. It's final. Or you can say either side can go to court. But if you're going to do that, put a disincentive in them going to court so that they make their final and best offers and they're serious when they go to arbitration. It doesn't just become a delaying practice. Put a 5% or 7% hurdle on them so that if you go to court, you only recover attorney's fees if you prove more than 5% of what you got out of arbitration. Then there's a disincentive to go into court. So that's just another thought as you look through the various options.
We've got to get out of this room. I just want to say thanks to everybody. It's been very enlightening for me, and I can only imagine how much you're paying Mr. Baker, so I hope it's worth your while.
Well, I appreciate all of you showing up, and we're going to work with Dick and with ideas. And if you would do the same thing, me and Dick, we have a very good working relationship, as I do with many of you. Thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you.
We're adjourned.
Is he any good at basketball?
Yeah, he passed me the ball whenever I needed it. Yeah. He was great.
All I had to do was get it into Gary.
Gary, just being...